Hi, everyone. Welcome to the first of the Aspiring Caithness and Sutherland podcast series. Just a quick note before we get into the podcast that topics such as suicide and other mental health issues are discussed. If you feel that you are in need of immediate support regarding your mental health and well-being, contact your local GP or call 999. All right, enjoy the podcast.
All right, hello, everybody, and welcome to our podcast. So we're going to get introduced to a couple of the folks that will be having a conversation today. My name is Rebecca Dunphy, and I am part of the Adaptive and Collaborative Community Team for Sutherland. So our official title is the Sutherland Adaptive and Collaborative Communities Team. So we're a group of four that are working in Sutherland, specifically with five locality groups. So that's Helmsdale, Goolsbee, Bora, Kinlochbervie, and Creek. And we do a number of projects that are Sutherland-wide. One of those is a mental health and well-being website called Sutherland Wellbeing, which we'll talk a little bit about later on. When we were working on the website and working with the Caithness team, who we'll chat with in a second, we really saw that there was a larger conversation that needed to be had around mental health and well-being in Sutherland. So we thought it would be a good idea to start a podcast series, opening up that conversation and kind of looking at it in within our communities. So yeah, I'll pass it over to Kay.
I am part of the Adaptive and Collaborative Communities team in Caithness. There is, like Rebecca said, a team of us that are trying to reduce inequalities in our region. So mirroring pretty much what Sutherland's doing, but we've got a team of three. We're led by Julie Marker as our project coordinator. And Julie's really heavily involved in the mental health community in Caithness and involving organisations in better advancing mental wellbeing in the county. So Stephanie Ramos and myself, we support Julie in that role, and we spend a lot of time working with the Mental Health Action Group. So the official title is the Social Isolation and Mental Wellbeing Action Group. But hopefully soon that's going to get a little shorter name of its own. And we are working on the Health for Caithness website, which is on mental health and wellbeing. So like Rebecca's, just for Caithness.
Amazing. So yeah, during this podcast, we're going to talk about the websites as well as the broader picture of mental health and well-being support in Caithness and Sutherland, where there might be gaps and where there might be opportunities. I myself am not a mental health expert, but we pulled in a couple folks that we are close with our projects that do work in the mental health sector a little closer. So we've got Yvonne Ross and Julie Marker here to chat with us. So Julie, we'll toss it over to you since your name's been thrown out a few times.
Thanks, Rebecca. So Kay gave a good introduction of our project that we're working on for the Adaptive and Collaborative Communities. We've been discussing mental health for the past year, working on various projects. But really, this is a topic that's ongoing and has been in existence, if you like, in Caithness, certainly for the last several years. We've just seen all kind of issues come to the fore through the pandemic. And so for me personally, I'm involved in the Adaptive and Collaborative project, but also I facilitate the group, the Mental Health Action Group, as Kay mentioned. I also participate in the Pathfinder project, Caithness Cares, in the Crisis and Recovery Group. And I'm also the project founder for Listening Ear, which is a new service to Caithness that is to support people who are going through a crisis for any reason that impacts their mental health. So that's kind of where we're at.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that, Julie. And then, Yvonne, if you could just take a moment to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Ross, and I've been employed for 21 years as a youth worker, although I don't believe I ever really grew up. So mentally, I think I'm still a young person. And I've worked in Sutherland for all of those 21 years, leading on activities, awards, employability skills, doing things like Duke of Edinburgh at the weekend, but more importantly, the one-to-one support for young people. During lockdown, as things got increasingly hard for our young people, I held wellbeing sessions daily for everyone in Highland that wanted to take part. And each day, more and more young people joined in. And it became a kind of a chat and a natter session. But some of those that joined in really needed some help with their social isolation. And I think it just helped them get through the hardest times. So I've still been doing these sessions during holidays and school isolation cases and lockdowns. And in January, I was seconded to Caithness Cares to help with a project project looking at young people's mental health due to the increasing numbers being referred to services and an increase in young adult suicide within Caithness. And I've really enjoyed working with especially the third sector organisations within Caithness. We're all trying to work so hard to help each other. So that's kind of a bit about my background.
You touched on working with the different third sector organizations and with young people in the community. And one thing that we thought would be great to elaborate on is the tiered system and exactly how mental health referrals work in the area. So if you could take a moment to just break down your experience with the tiered system and how that typically works, that would be great.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. Within mental health services, we work within a four-tiered approach. So tier one are provided by practitioners working in universal services who are not usually mental health specialists but have been trained. They're able to offer general advice and treatment for less severe problems, and this helps with early intervention and prevention. These can be youth workers, guidance teachers, most importantly third sector organisations who offer advice and support, counsellors and parents. The reason that these are most important is that sometimes it is just a listening ear that people need, and they just need someone to listen with empathy to what's going on in their lives, and this can help them get through a rough period, and it saves them building everything up and it manifesting itself when they have to move on to tier two services. So tier two practitioners offer consultation to families and other practitioners. They identify severe or complex needs requiring more specialist intervention. They do assessments which may lead to treatment at a different tier. They also train practitioners at Tier 1 level, and through Caithness Cares we've had those Tier 2 and Tier 3 practitioners lead the training for over 200 people within Caithness on mental health awareness, suicide awareness and trauma informed. So they've been rolling out the training to what we would call our intervention at Tier 1 services. Then they also have, they're usually made up of school nurses and primary mental health workers within the school system, and they also refer up the way with more complex cases that they can't work with at that moment. So they move to Tier 3 services, which are usually multidisciplinary teams or services working in a community mental health setting or a child and adolescent psychiatry outpatient service, which is provided by the CALM service in Inverness. So they provide a service for children and young people with more severe, complex and persistent disorders, and then they can refer on to Tier 4, which encompasses essential tertiary level services such as intensive community treatment services, day units, inpatient units. These are generally services for the small number of children and young people who are deemed to be at greatest risk of rapidly declining mental health or serious self-harm, and to require a period of intensive input for the purpose of assessment or treatment. And I think it's important to note that young people can move between the tiers, so they may be seen by Tier 2 and referred on to Tier 3, and then they might come back to Tier 1 just for that ongoing support. But once that they've been seen by a practitioner, it's very easy to refer back to them so that they can get that consultation quickly for that early intervention.
That was great. I have one quick question, just again, for someone that doesn't know much about the mental health sector. Is CALM just for young people?
Yeah, so CALM stands for Child and Adult Mental Health Services, and they use the tiered system as the approach to work with young people. I think it's important to emphasise the great need of intervention at Tier 1 so that we can assess what young people need. I mean, one of the young people that I've worked with had experienced low mood and was feeling a bit isolated from her family and her friends. And she then, as things progressed, started self-harming. So I referred on to the primary mental health worker, who then did some intensive work with the young person about self-harming. The self-harming continued and ended up that she was referred on to Tier 4 CALM's outpatient service in Inverness. This required her to make the long bus journey to Inverness, but she was able to be supported by her parents to get there, and I took her to a couple of appointments. But unfortunately, unfortunately, the young girl's mental health, as this whole system approach worked with her, her mental health deteriorated and she became more and more isolated from friends and family because of the journey that she was on. And she ended up having to be put into inpatient services, which were in Dundee. For anyone that, you know, needs intensive support, the nearest inpatient beds for young people under the age of 18 are in Dundee and in Edinburgh. Unfortunately, that meant that the parents were no longer able to afford to visit, so we as a service then raised money to provide train fares and accommodation so that the parents could get down to see the young person, which helped her mental health recovery greatly because being totally isolated at 14 years old and inpatient in a strange town, strange place, at least 5 hours away from your own family, and not being able to get that holistic family support. So it was really important for us to keep that family together, although they were apart. I have to say, she's back now. She's doing great, married with her own children. She copes with everyday life. She has her own coping strategy. She's built up her resilience. So there is light at the end of the tunnel for everybody. You just need a bit of support at different times in your life. And I think it's really important that we all realise that we have mental health and that we need to take care of ourselves. And when we're not coping, we need to speak to somebody and let them know and let them help us as well.
That was a great example. And you did a good job of kind of putting the information in there as well about bigger picture. So it's 5 hours away. You're going to have to go to Dundee. You're going to have to go to Edinburgh. It's not like there's this support in Inverness or even closer to home. So it wears on somebody that's already in a pretty fragile place.
I know Dornoch has a school roll of about 300, and in the last 5-6 years we've had 3 young people admitted to Dundee and Edinburgh. But I do think that sending our children away these long distances really don't help the situation. But what else can you do? Okay, now it's Julie's turn to speak. I'm just going to sit here and smile.
Thank you, Yvonne. That was a great example of somebody that's gone through your tiered system approach you were talking about. And I know that in Caithness, we've had very similar situations. It's the same kind of distance to ports for tier 3 and 4 that you're experiencing as well. Julie has set up a listening ear project in response to people over the last 18 months, 2 years, that have not had that ability to contact services and get support. So they've been working directly with the community. So I'll hand over to Julie and she can talk a little bit about her experiences as well.
Thanks, Kay. That was really helpful, Yvonne, to hear some of the experiences that you've found with, particularly with the younger people. So for us in Listening Ear, this is a project that is aimed at all ages. And it's in response really to some of the things that we've been hearing in the last 18 months, as Kay said. But really, it kind of feeds right into one of the biggest issues that we find in Caithness. And that is this issue with people feeling that everything else happens elsewhere. So everything is in Inverness. And, you know, there are services that are national services that are really brilliant. But time and time again, people have to travel or they don't get the quality of services, if you like, that other areas have. So there's a growing perception, I would say, that, again, we're left behind, you know, time and time again. So for me, Listening Ear is very much about a local service. We understand the demographics of the local community. We understand the local issues. And so for us, that is quite key when people contact us. We understand that you can't just say, well, can you make an appointment? Because we know sometimes it's, you know, a year, 2 year waiting list. So it doesn't replace anything that the NHS and other services are providing. It kind of plugs those gaps. And one of those gaps is, first of all, quick response. And then secondly, helping people to find other sources of support, because there are lots and lots of projects and organisations in Caithness. But again, you know, if you don't know where to access these things, then, you know, or who can access them and, you know, is this relevant for me? So that's kind of the response, that the reason and I suppose the idea behind some of the things that we're doing. So we have been building the service from the ground up, and we have a WhatsApp line so people can contact us directly at the moment. And the kind of issues are very varied. People contact us with, and it can be those very, very, I suppose, what you would perhaps put on the tiered system that Yvonne was talking about, the tier one, you know, so low mood and just people feeling depressed or sad or just worried about various things. And then we get people come through that are bereaved, maybe they're feeling suicidal. We do get those calls, people wanting to self-harm. For us, it's about opening the door to anybody, whatever their background is. We never quite know what we're going to get, which can be challenging, obviously. We work on the basis that we are there to listen and support and then signpost as appropriate. So we've got a really good database of other services that we can help with and signpost or refer to. We can also contact out of hours emergency services if we need to. Generally speaking, people just want to speak to somebody that they trust and feel that they can just open up to. A lot of times people will say that even their families have kind of felt maybe overwhelmed themselves and can't cope with this ongoing situation. I suppose it is like a safe haven, if you like, where people can just offload and they don't feel judged, and we don't judge them because obviously we want people to come. And if they feel any element of feeling judged or not listened to properly, then that would prevent them from coming back or talking about our service. Okay.
I just thought that was a good place to interject and say that, you know, when you go to your doctor, they don't always have the time to talk through your issues with you. If you've been to your doctor because you're experiencing low mood and depression, and they've said to you that they feel that you could benefit from maybe just some socially prescribed activity, or whether they do feel that you could benefit for some medication, what they could actually say in the meantime as well is you can contact Listening Ear, and you would have that time to sit with them, hopefully in person soon, but just now via WhatsApp, and just go through that conversation. Because like Yvonne said, sometimes it's just the conversation that's needed just to help someone focus on how they can help themselves. It's not, like you say, an organization that has doctors actually physically listening and giving you advice, but just that breathing space in between and that cushion of support that you've been talking about as well. The other thought I had while you were talking there, Julie, as well, was that it's like a live signposting service. So yes, there are websites that have the information there. There is obviously our website that we're developing that's got the one-to-one experiences of the organizations. But the really important thing about Listening Ear is in that moment where you're talking to somebody, you have the up-to-date contact that you can refer straight onto. And because it's live, it will always be up to date because you're always in that network. So there isn't a chance for it to go static and out of date, which is really cool and really something that is needed both in Caithness and Sutherland, is not to direct somebody to somewhere that is just a generic email address. You have a good route in, and it's a personal referral as well, so someone would feel more supported.
What we find with people signposting to our service is that GPs and the mental health team more recently know that they can give people the opportunity to talk further. So sometimes if people go to the GP, they might be referred on, for example. Same with the mental health team, they might have an appointment that they need to wait for. But then we can plug a bit of support in that space so that whilst they're still waiting or whilst they're undergoing treatment, they can still find some support that is available at any time that they need. So we always do call back within 24 hours. We aim to do that within a couple of hours, and more often than not, I'd say 90% plus, we respond within sort of half an hour if it's a WhatsApp call. The other thing that is important to mention is that we have the most up-to-date information on other services that we can signpost them to. So for example, someone called just recently and they were having problems within their family and feeling low, multiple issues really, but nothing too high level exactly, but it was just kind of needing a bit of ongoing support. So we can do that straight away, and then we can signpost to Homestart. That was the particular organisation that we referred to, and we know that this person is now being supported by that other charity. I mean, that's the good thing about working within the sphere of mental health, is because we're at all these different meetings, so we hear the most up-to-date information. We can feed that back to our team of volunteers, and they can provide the most up-to-date information on whatever projects are going on. There's always new projects. That's a great thing. Another great thing about Third Sector, there's always a new project. You know, we're always kind of hunting for these gaps, and then we try and plug them. That's another thing that I would say is one of the strengths of working in the Third Sector. And I know in recent months, for sure, it's been the Third Sector response to all the issues that have been going on as a result of the pandemic. That has just been excellent, and it's been great to work with all the different types of agencies as well, all coming together to try and make a difference.
Thank you both so much for sharing a little bit more about what it is that you do and your role in the community. Since you both have such a wide network that you're working with and are working with a number of people in a variety of different situations, it would be great to hear from you sort of what you see people experiencing most in terms of barriers to accessing mental health or anything else that really discourages people from reaching out just to have that conversation or the more kind of direct support that they might need for what they're experiencing. Whichever of you feels comfortable jumping in and has some thoughts, it'd be great to hear from you.
Well, I've put my mic off, so will I go first? I think there's lots of barriers to accessing support within rural communities. And the biggest one is transport and childcare. For young mums that have young children, it's very hard to get childcare to attend appointments. But the distance from the CALM service in Inverness, you know, for young people from Caithness and Sutherland, it's about a bus journey. If your parents don't have access to a car or your parents aren't able to accompany you on that to that appointment. We've a young girl whose parents are both drug addicts and she had to take a 2-hour bus journey to get to the appointment. She had to borrow bus money from a neighbour because there was no money within the household. So in the days leading up to that appointment, there's an increased anxiety around finding the money for the bus, getting herself organised, working herself up about the journey, the changeover of bus in Inverness to get out to the hospital site. And going on her own on the bus journey was a frightening experience as well, especially during COVID. During the 2-hour bus journey, her anxiety levels were increasing and increasing because she kept replaying the appointment over and over in her head and what she was going to tell them and how she was going to answer them and were they going to believe her and how was she going to get help. And then by the time she gets the appointment, she is not in a fit mental state for taking part fully in the appointment. So we need to look at how we can bring that anxiety levels down. And it's about that holistic approach of everyone working together and looking at, does this young person need money and how can we relieve part of our anxieties around that appointment? Part of what we've been working on is getting visiting services and providing safe spaces for those services. The CALMS Tier 3 services are now visiting Caithness every Friday, so that should cut down on some of the barriers for young people accessing appointments. But we also have that they don't like using the phone, they prefer to text or WhatsApp, they don't want to speak in person, support due to fear of running into someone that they know. Young people want complete anonymity. They don't want to be walking in where there might be an aunt or a neighbour or the whole school knows that they're having an appointment. So really developing those safe spaces in different locations within WIC and Thurso has been a real priority. So we're looking at Thurso Youth Club now opening for the older young people so that the CALMS visiting services can do their appointments there. And WIC Youth Club have prepared 2 consulting rooms on the end of their building and they're being used by Rossash at the moment. And it's about developing those spaces for young people to access the help that they need so that we remove as many barriers as is possible.
Is there an opportunity there for support for the people that are on these bus journeys where they could link up to the listening ear WhatsApp and just have that conversation for that 2 hours on the way down? They are able to WhatsApp and know that there will be somebody there that can answer just their anxiety and just someone to like a sounding board almost say, this is what I'm feeling just now. Can you help me through it? Can you talk me through it? Do you think this sounds okay? You know, like you're saying, if they're trying to play this situation over and over in their head, if they have someone to bounce off, that might be helpful for them. But also for a listening ear person, and you come in at any point, Julie, and for a listening ear person to be a little cushion of support where this CAM service is taking place in Caithness. So there's maybe a listening ear person in the waiting room that can again be the sounding board, take that anxiety off of suddenly CAMS is here, this is my opportunity to really get help. Just a little bit of hand-holding, even for the first wee while until word of mouth spreads that it's just not actually that scary.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, a lot of the work that Tier 1 services provide, whether that's third sector organisations or statutory services, is about that hand-holding, but it's mainly about the empathy and understanding and the proactive help on how to get through a situation. And I suppose that's where we talk about that early intervention. I mean, if you think about that young girl, if we'd had support from Home Start or from the youth worker in the area, if the young girl had said, or even if as a youth worker I knew the young girl had a CAMHS appointment, that could then help me, because I would know that the family circumstances wouldn't allow for that young person to have parent transport to the hospital. So it's about all working together and sharing information so that we can help the young people get the most out of the help that's available to them. And it is that real empathy. And I think what I've seen in Caithness over the last 6 months is a real community spirit of empathy and understanding that might not have been there in the past. And I think this is similar in Sutherland. The COVID experience has allowed communities and people who live in them to support each other and not be judgmental, whereas I think in the past a lot of different aspects of different communities have judged certain families and certain areas. And I think the COVID experience has opened their eyes to a lot of these people are living in circumstances that are beyond their control, and we have to look at mental health like that as well, that it's not something that someone wants to happen to them. It can happen to any of us at any day, at any given time. And it's about having someone that's there beside you, holding your hand, as you say, Kay, just to help each other.
I think COVID has been a really interesting kind of turning point for communities in terms of the discussion and recognition of mental health supports. So when our project first started in Sutherland, we were just having conversations with communities throughout the area. And when we looked at the locality plans that had been done by the first initial phase of our project in 2018, mental health wasn't near the top in terms of a priority of, you know, inequalities in terms of support or a drastic need in the areas. But we kind of checked back in with communities through a brief survey, and mental health was at the top, if not the most important issue recognized by each community. One thing that I thought would be interesting, maybe Julie, you can jump in on this, or Yvonne, if you have something else as well. I'm curious to hear how you get feedback from people in your area or the specific demographics that you work with to hear this doesn't work. I'm not comfortable using the phone. I'm not comfortable going into a local space and I'm afraid I'll run into somebody that I know and I don't want that to happen. If you could just touch on how you're able to hear from people actually experiencing these services about how they want them to change or what they actually need out of them.
I suppose because I've mentioned about the young people and the types of space that they want to be seen in and that they don't want to use the phone, it's about continuous engagement with those young people. And I work with them every day of the week, but specifically in Caithness, we've run quite a lot of focus groups with young people, and it's been really interesting. They've all come from different locations, so they don't all live in Wick or Thurso. They might live quite rural in Caithness, and they're not all the same age group, and they're not all got the same backgrounds. So we might be doing a focus group with young carers, or we might be doing a focus group with young people who are not in education at the moment. And so we've mixed it across the way, and nearly all of them have come back and said that main barrier is that they will not pick up a phone. They don't do phones. If they go to see somebody in school, they get called out of class and then they go to our room, and everybody in the school knows that that room is for a visiting service. So you're either going to see the school nurse or the primary mental health worker or the CAMHS worker, whereas certainly in Dornoch Academy where I work, I've got a youth work base built on at the end of the school. So if a young person is called by reception, they just get told that Yvonne wants to see them. So I might be seeing them about their Duke of Edinburgh, about a trip to the cinema, whether we're doing an activity, whatever it is. So anyone in that class doesn't know why the young person's leaving. So it's quite acceptable for that young people to get called out to see me at any point in any day. and nobody wonders. And then when they reach reception, they're diverted to the service. Now, I think that's something that can quite easily be put into in other schools if we look at it. But I mean, there's not youth workers in every school, but there's bound to be someone that you would go to for something within the school. But I think in Caithness, they felt so strongly that they wanted the appointments to be out with the school. And it's maybe because the youth workers are not in the school, so it couldn't be hidden as well there. And I think especially just now with COVID and visiting services not being in the school in their usual rooms, so the careers advisor hadn't been going in and things like that, so it became more apparent who was getting called out to appointment. So the tier three worker that I met with last week, he's really keen on using the safe spaces that are adjoined to the two youth clubs, because he's using Dunbar Hospital at the moment and Wick Hospital, and that's clinical rooms. Young people don't want to be seen in clinical rooms. They want to be seen in comfy, welcoming places. And I suppose the long-term ambition is that they have their own youth hubs, so that everybody that they might want to access from tier one to tier three is in there working, but it's a youth base. You're not going in there to see those people. You're going in there to meet a mate for a coffee or whatever it is. And I think, Julie, you've come up with lots of barriers, you know, about people accessing support. So it'd be good to give it from a community point as well as the youth work viewpoint.
Yeah. So just picking up what Yvonne was talking about with the way that people feel, or particularly young people, and what they want, I think we need to listen. That there's kind of a thought around Caithness and maybe other areas that these communities are consulted to death. They have so many consultations. We're always talking. You know, we love to do our surveys and things like that. And I've been involved in a number of those in the past 2 years. Time and time again, the same issues in various guises keep coming up. So one, people are talking and no one's listening. Well, they feel that no one's listening because they don't really understand how their voice matters or makes a difference. Because people feel disconnected from services, or that these barriers are just so much so that people are not really respected. So many stories, people treated with the stigma that they feel they already have. So the services that you perhaps need to go to overcome some of these issues, like anxiety, social anxiety, really distressing conditions. And yet they're told, they're asked, you know, I need counselling. I want to speak to somebody one-to-one. And what happens? They're given a group, talking about very young people, put into a group with people that are in their 40s, 50s. This is even from just a common sense. You kind of think, is this really sensible? So again, it's listening to people and then designing those services so that they meet the needs of the people. So it's not just these services are being done to people and young people. They have an input into the way things are shaped and how they're planned out. All the time we can provide evidence and feedback of these stories kind of being replayed, retold over and over again. For me, you know, with Listen Ear, it's very much about we want a compassionate response. Why do we think that anything less is acceptable when somebody's traumatized? You know, and let's not forget that most of these issues that we're talking about, mental illness, if you like, is a result of things happening to people. So a lot of it is rooted in trauma. So the fallout of that, if you like, is depression. There's so many things, side effects, if you like, of trauma that's been there perhaps for years for many people, and to be relived, and then to not be treated well, not to be respected, to be stigmatized. Going back to Listen Ear, for us, it's very much about we see the whole person. And we see that it takes a holistic approach to kind of working with people and seeing what things matter to them. You know, it's not about what we think is good for them. It's about what matters to them. And how can we try and connect some of those dots? And it begins with a conversation. It begins with, first of all, reminding them that we can see them. We want to hear from them, and their opinions matters. And sometimes this can be a messy time, you know, it can be, because when we're dealing with people's maybe hidden things that are hidden for years, there's a lot of shame and stigma, and it takes a lot of time and effort to do that. But it's worth it, because the ripple effects of that to families and to young people, the next generation, it's worth investing that time into.
I think for us as well in Caithness, what we've gone through in the social isolation and mental wellbeing action group is exactly that. We've been consulting people. We did the survey last October, which, like you mentioned, Rebecca, gave us a great indication of how far up the list for people mental health has gotten, and the beginnings of a normalising conversation about mental health, and people being in a position now where they have been trapped at home with it for so long now, and they're starting to address their own issues a little bit better. So getting down that first barrier of starting to talk about it is coming. It's the trust of the community between seeing this consultation, this survey that's come out. You've been really keen to gather their thoughts and ideas. They've been really enthusiastic in giving it to you. We had almost 300 responses for ours, which, you know, we just weren't expecting. People don't usually engage well with surveys. And it was quite in depth. So they came back, they gave us their feedback, and they don't see the peddling feet of the duck under the water that's going on. And, you know, the time between October and now, 3/4 of a year, and people haven't necessarily seen a result from it, other than people are networking a little bit better. The organizations are starting to work better together, like the conversations we've just had just now about where one can support the other, where there can be a bridge between the statutory services and the organizations that are referring in, the cushions of support that are available. So hopefully by these sort of little activities that are starting to spring up, these conversations around more support services becoming available, their third sector, they're tier one, but they're starting to bubble to the surface. And hopefully the community is recognizing that. But I understand it can be so frustrating for people who have given you that time and feedback to then not see anything for quite a long period and be aware of money coming into the county to support mental health, but not seeing a direct result. And it's kind of how we manage expectations going forward. And we just be a little bit better at banging our drum, blowing our trumpets and say, look, we are here, we're doing these things, and how do you feel about them? It just takes so much time to get something started up. It can just feel like there's a stagnant period in between. And I think that's one of the barriers we've got to address now, is being just a little bit quicker off the mark to explain what we're doing and being a bit more transparent. So hopefully these kind of podcasts will help people as well see the progress between these big events of here's the consultation, here's the funding, here's the service. There could be 4 months in between, but we just need to be a bit more active in our community conversations.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you wanted me to comment a little bit about that, because I kind of alluded to the fact that there's, you know, the perception is that there's not much going on, but there, you know, some of the activities that we've been involved with, maybe. So although I said that people in Caithness feel that they've been consulted over and over again and not much is happening, I'd just like to outline a few things that have been happening over the last few months as a result of the meetings, COVID response team that was meeting the very, very beginning, and all the communities got together, and there's a great outpouring of resource, you know, in terms of volunteers and people going to collect shopping, and for the people that were shielding, they were getting their newspapers and prescriptions. But born out of that, we received a lot of information from some of these volunteers that were saying, you know, we're worried about our community. We're worried about the rise in suicides, the premature deaths, people just deteriorating generally in their mental health. Very quickly, we formed an action group. And in that action group is people from all different backgrounds, the community response teams themselves, but then the third sector agencies, public sector, private practitioners formed an action group for social isolation and mental well-being. And the two were very much interplayed at that particular time. But then we realised that mental health is obviously such a complex topic. So we talk about all kinds of things in there. But very, very early on, we were quite keen that it wouldn't just become another talking group, but it had to be an action group. So at each meeting we have every month, we have actions to take forward. So one of the very early things that we wanted to do was to go back to the community and say, you know, OK, so we had a lot of consulting prior to the pandemic, but what's happening now? So we put out a survey, and we received almost 300 responses, which was just wonderful expecting, but it told us something that that people wanted to have their story told. And we received some stories that we kind of expected, again, through the anecdotal stories that we were hearing through various meetings. But some of the stories are quite harrowing, and it really did give us a glimpse of what was the most up-to-date information. So from there, we decided that we wanted to collectively work to try and reduce some of the stigma. That was one of the big issues, that people felt that they weren't listened to, or they were ashamed to try and reach out for help. So we started to build a campaign group. One of the guys on the team actually produced a poster and used people from Caithness community that work in some capacity with mental health. And we put out this poster campaign, a digital poster, because obviously it wasn't so easy to go and put posters up in the normal place. But it was really important to see local faces declaring that message, it's okay to not be okay. We know that men particularly find it difficult to talk about their emotions. So it was very, very key and fitting at that time. But that was as a direct result of the community consultation that we did. So since then, we've had, obviously, I mentioned listen and ear service. Again, that was because we were told people don't know how to access things, for one. But also, there's a lot of confusion about what service is right for them. And you know, if you're struggling with your mental health, the last thing you want to do is start looking on website after website after website and thinking, is that for me? Or what number is that I need? How do I get them? The certain times, most of them work 9 to 5, you know, office hours. I can't get seen like out of hours. So what happens, you know, if I'm somebody at home that's afraid and there's only certain times that I can speak to somebody? So, you know, all of these things have been taken into account for developing listening ear. One of the other things that has resulted directly from that information, again, the stories where we hear, on one hand, there's so many organisations that are out there working really hard, really passionate about their own organisations and services and the people that they serve. We wanted to really take on board these things and think, well, how can we make it so that everybody just knows where to go? It seems such a really simple idea. And very, very early on in our team, our manager asked us, so what are we going to do, ladies, about mental health, you know, in Caithness? And obviously the backdrop of the things I've just mentioned. So we sat and we brainstormed and we put big pieces of paper everywhere and just doodled. And we came up with the idea of just creating an interactive resource that would, one, put everything in one place, that would, two, help, like, handhold people. So we developed what is about to be launched very soon, Hear for Caithness. And Hear stands for Help, Education, Resources for Everyone's Mental Health. It's help for everyone. Everybody that would go on there will find something, whether it's because they're experiencing low mood, whether it's because they're worried about their children self-harming, whether they're just feeling a bit lonely and isolated, going back to that issue. We know that, you know, when we connect to wider groups, we have better mental health, we have better well-being. So the whole thing is around health and well-being. With this new website, we have videos of organisations introducing their services, because sometimes people struggle to understand what happens when they reach out to a service.
Thanks, Julie. I think it's really important as well to, as well as Listen and Ear and the Hear for Caithness projects that have come out of that survey, to emphasise as well the custody link service, because again, that's an area of the community that might not want to reach out directly to Listen and Ear because they might think it's a bit fluffy, a bit woolly for them, and that wouldn't be able to afford an internet connection or a device to be able to get connected to some that are like Hear for Caithness. Actually physically put in somebody within the custody service who is that link into the third sector organisations has been really important. And that was supported by the Caithness Cares project as well.
Okay, I was thinking all the time that Julie was speaking, that's really important. I must go back to that bit. And now it's gone completely. But it was really important. So hopefully it'll appear in my brain. No, I think it's really important that people don't have those really high expectations and that they understand that even if we have the time and the money and the will and we're really passionate and we're trying to do everything that we can, that things do take time and we can't solve problems for everyone. We have to look after our own well-being as well. And I've suddenly taken up knitting again as a distraction during COVID because I'm a people person and I'm out and about all the time. And because I didn't have that, I'm in my house and what do I do? So I'm knitting, I'm doing jigsaws and all those sort of mundane things that you think, oh, I won't ever do that. But it's amazing how they divert the brain from thinking about things and dwelling on them. So I suppose that's what we think about resilience is, and coping strategies is learning that we all have to look after our mental well-being and our mental health. And look for distractions, things that we can just take our minds off what's going on at the moment. And sometimes things don't look quite as bad once you've been distracted for a wee while. And that's the same with going to speak to someone from listening ear. You've spoken about it, but you've also, in some ways, let it go a little bit. Our mental health subgroup started last year. Having worked with young people for over 20 years, every year, the young people's priorities, the top of it has been mental health or transport. The two have moved, and I've done these conferences. We do summer and winter every single year, and it depends on the group of kids that you're working with, but it usually is mental health, transport, and access to services and PSE programme, and that four topics just alter all the time. So in Sutherland, we looked at the rise in mental health, especially among the adults and in the rural communities, especially up the, around the north and the west. So we set up our subgroup. It was prior to working with Caithness Cares. So the adaptive and collaborative team had looked at the resources website. So that's where our Sutherland Wellbeing website came in. We've also done posters. There's now posters for going out in the doctor's surgeries with links and resources that are available, more localised links. So things like Tykes for young people, and you've got Caithness Click, who are doing a fantastic service and have put in a safe space in their back of their building. They've got a chalet with a counsellor who's visiting. You know, all of these things are happening for the young people. So in Sutherland, in some ways, we were heading in a different trajectory of how we were going to do things, in that we were going to go into the local areas and then build services and not do it as a whole county. But after doing Caithness Cares and being able to see the benefit of sharing the knowledge, the resources and pulling together, we've now changed and we're going to do the same in Sutherland as we did in Caithness. And actually now they're looking at rolling it out Highland-wide, the process of bringing everyone together. So they've called it Highland Cares. So Caithness Cares was the lead and now it's going to be Highland Cares. And our Sutherland Cares stakeholder event is in September, but we're holding a youth event on the 8th of September that will run exactly the same. Personally, I think it's really important that, as well as asking the adults what they want, we need to have the young people on board from the very start, and it'll be young people centred.
I'll just jump in super quickly to add to the Sutherland Wellbeing website, since maybe this would be a good opportunity to just share a bit of information about that. And one thing I will say is I completely relate with you, Yvonne, in terms of picking up random activities to keep your mind busy during lockdown. I made 3 quilts. Do I need 3 quilts? No, I do not. But it really became a distraction. And another thing that ties into Sutherland Wellbeing and why we chose to make the website the way that we did was, we've talked a lot today about mental health and well-being, which tie together in a lot of ways, but a lot of the time we found community groups kind of put a guard up when it came to the word mental health. They felt they didn't have the expertise, the knowledge, or the resources to claim that they were offering mental health supports, but what they were doing is they're offering services that are so good for the community's well-being. So be it community cafes, walking groups, painting classes, anything that kind of helped people. Practicing self-care was what we wanted to highlight on this website. So SutherlandWellbeing.com has a resources page. There's a map section as well as a calendar section. So we wanted to highlight services like Samaritans and stuff like that that people can access. But the main thing we wanted to do with the site was look at more of a local approach. So going into Sutherland, opening up a map, and you can look at your local community because Sutherland is such a large geographical area. If you go into the map section, you can see, oh, look at this. Google Space offering some services that may help my mental well-being. I'll reach out to them and see what they're offering currently. Or you can go to the resources section and look for local supports and you're able to see what's available. And I think breaking down that barrier of mental health versus well-being was something that was really helpful for some communities that we've been working with to shed the light on all the amazing work that they're doing and the difference that they are making in people's lives, especially during the last year where it has been so trying. That was one of our big projects, was putting together the website. And it's been great. It's been live since early spring, and we're still getting new resources every day. A lot of, it's always adapting. It's always changing. We're just trying our best to make sure it's nothing becomes stagnant or a resource becomes out of date. So that's been a really great way to for the Adaptive and Collaborative Communities team to work in partnership with the mental health subgroup of the Sutherland Community Partnership, because we're able to both have ownership over this site and make sure that there's some succession to it after the end of our project. One other thing that was just touched on earlier and Yvonne said as well is not everybody has an internet connection or a stable broadband connection. So we've been trying to make sure that we're sharing these some key services and initiatives with folks through posters of GPs or sharing out information. For example, the Kyle Sutherland has a great local newspaper that goes out, and we were able to share some resources in there.
It was just when you were talking about health and well-being. Yeah, I was just thinking about how important it is for people that are, you know, we've been thinking about, you know, through the pandemic, a lot of people have had to carry on working and supporting other people, probably in a more intense way than ever before. And I think there's just some concern about those workers that have been pouring out, often women, often having families at home, having to homeschool, you know, juggle all these different roles. And I think there's just something to be said about, you know, taking care of ourselves and reminding each other to do that, to have the mental health breaks where we need to, kind of normalizing that even, and understanding that, you know, when we talk about self-management, we're not talking about this for everybody else, you know, and people that might use our services. It needs to be for ourselves, as, and understanding those trigger points. So when we're often we have our own issues that we've dealt with or are dealing with, and I think it's just kind of building this self-awareness into everything that we do. And mental health is integrated into everything that we do, into lives, into communities, into countries, affects everything, and this interplay. I think it's great that it's just been talked about so much more now, because we are all involved in helping other people. Let's not forget, we need to look after ourselves and each other as well.
I think a lot of what's come out of this conversation today is the importance of maintaining conversation, but doing it in a responsible way. So like you say, Yvonne and Julie, you've touched on as well, offloading, but in a productive way and in a way that's helpful for everybody, being a bit mindful of, yeah, you need to offload, and it might be your husband or your best friend that gets it, but mindful of the situation that they've been in as well over these last 18, 24 months, and the sorts of things they had on them before all that too. So it's very easy to think of everything just in a COVID perspective, but all the issues that were pre-COVID are still there. They've just been pushed down as well. So keeping the conversations open, we've been talking about that quite a bit in the campaign group. That's the offshoot of the action group that we've got, and how we encourage people to have these conversations, but without overburdening other people. Everybody, like you said, have their own coping mechanisms and their own strategies, and people don't necessarily understand why you've suddenly thrown yourself into your gardening when you've never even touched a weed before in your life, how you're suddenly spending your hours knitting instead of answering phone calls, why you're suddenly not turning up for those Zoom calls. You know, at the beginning everybody was in a quiz almost every night of the week. You know, all these sorts of things of, at the beginning, you were really still involved and you were trying to peddle and maintain all these relationships, and how they've broken down over the last couple of years, how we kind of get that conversation going again that supports the reintegration of each individual into the community, because everyone's got a different need. And I think the two websites will really help that. But as we've touched on as well, there are people that either won't or can't engage with a website. So to have those secondary services that come off of that as well, like Listening Ear, like Custody Link, like the work that you've been doing, Yvonne, with one-to-ones in the schools, and just taking the successes and trying to replicate them as best we can with the resources that we have. The Dornoch example of what you had there, of just giving that safe space that's not an obvious space in the school, little things, and that the sharing of techniques and tips, not just between community members, but between organizations as well, again, Caithness Cares has done that really well. It's brought people together talking where they wouldn't usually. And there's still a long way to go between groups like connecting, but it's such a good start. The same with the action groups. And you're seeing that in Sutherland replicated now, that what's been successful in Caithness is spreading to Sutherland, is spreading through the Highlands. So a great thing to have springboarded off of. It's just maintaining that energy, trying not to be fatigued by it. And hopefully we can move forward like that.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that, Kay, about what you said about, you know, working together. It's remembering that we've all been through this pandemic. Nobody on the earth has escaped from it. And I think we need, as we go forward, is a time of recovery. So we need that time of recovery. And I think it's great to have the example, like you said, Yvonne, about knitting and talking about that as well. So people think, oh, hadn't even thought about that. You know what it's like sometimes? It's when someone says something, or I need to drink more water. It kind of, it's like a prompt, isn't it? And I think trying to remember to say about all the lovely things that contribute towards our well-being. As we go through this period of recovery, it's remembering all these connections can be built on for good. So we're building resilience into the community and into our own lives. I think as we go forward, it's a really opportune time. We now have everyone listening. Everyone's talking about mental health, and it's just a really good force to go forward, you know, collectively, collaboratively. I mean, that's a bit of a buzzword, but it is true. You know, it is everybody making a difference. And I think that's a great thing to come from this, you know, as we go forward.
Great way to end, Julie, because it is about everybody looking after everybody.
Thanks, everyone, for coming along. It's a great start to our podcast series, and we hope to pick up with you again.
If you'd like to access any of the services or resources discussed during the episode, please head to the description of this episode.